what you say is way more important than, you know, was your aperture f8 or f4? Well, you know, yes, it helps, obviously, and you'd need to know your gear, but I find I want to make sure that I'm getting the right expressions from people and getting them to feel comfortable.
Welcome to the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast, your resource for building the photography business of your dreams. This is Shamira Young, bringing you tips, business strategies, and interviews with award-winning photographers. We're all in this together. Let's get to the good stuff. Hey everybody, I'm here with Dan Waters. Dan has been a professional wedding and portrait photographer for 8 years, and he's also the co-founder of GetProPhotoClub.com, where he helps turn photographers into savvy entrepreneurs. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hi there, thank you for having me on. It's an absolute honor and a privilege, so yeah, looking forward to it.
Well, you know, I'm super excited to chat, and in our pre-interview chat, as I like to call it, you mentioned that you had a background in marketing. And one thing that I found is that when I have people on the show and they have a background in business and marketing before they were ever a photographer, they have some gold nuggets to reveal to us as far as how to make our businesses successful. And they bring a slightly different perspective than someone who just got into photography for photography, if that makes sense. So I'm really excited to chat with you today.
Cool. Oh, I just thought we were just going to talk about presets and Photoshop actions. Is that right?
You're on the wrong podcast.
Okay, see you. Bye.
Oh, well, awesome. You know, I know a bit about you and your background, but for the benefit of our listening audience, give us an overview of yourself and kind of how you ended up doing what you're doing today.
Sure. Well, a little bit of background. As you said, I was a marketing professional. That was for about 15 years or something or so. So, you know, marketing manager and various jobs throughout the different businesses, from charities through to sort of big construction companies and so forth. So, yeah, I had a marketing background. And as part of that, I was always having to kind of read up on marketing, learn about marketing, and I was very much, I took the marketing stream at university as well. So really, since I was like, and even before university, what we call over here in the UK, in case you hadn't realised, I've got an English accent, I'm over in the UK, we have this thing called BTEC National Diploma, and so I even did it all the way back to when, you know, like 16, wow. When I was 16. So. So I've been following various sort of marketing experts, if you like, people like Dan Kennedy, Drayton Bird, Results Corporation, and salespeople as well, Zig Ziglar and so forth. So over the years, and tell you what, I learned a lot more from them than I ever did at university. So hey, don't go to school, kids. Just go on. just go on to blogs like Pro Photographer Journey and learn all your stuff there, because it's way better. I didn't say that. But I got to about 31 or something like that, and thought, do you know what? I don't like. I love marketing, and but I don't like writing about, you know, roof tiles and gutters and, you know, boring things. I kind of like putting together the brochures and the magazines, and I like the photography side. And I thought, that's how, without kind of going into a really long story, I kind of thought, maybe I want to do something on my own, and photography, I'll try that. If I like photographing roof tiles, because I was kind of taking the odd photograph for these companies, then maybe, you know, something more interesting will be an absolute pleasure. And it turned out that it was. So, I started, and like pretty much we were chatting before we went live. I pretty much struggled like everybody else, even though I had the background in marketing. But I did. The golden nugget that you mentioned was probably that I can write. I can, and at the end of the day, marketing, whether it's an advert, whether it's an email newsletter, whether it's a blog post, whether it's a billboard, it's got the key ingredient are the words, you know, all those things are words, and it's the words that actually do the persuading. It's not the photographs, it's not the logo, it's the words that are used on, that's the thing that's going to actually get somebody to physically pick up their phone and call you, or at the very least email you. So, and that's what I used to do, say, for year after year, that I was generally writing the words. So that was my unfair advantage, if you like. My competitive advantage was I could write, and most photographers hate writing, and their websites tend to be very kind of, you know, photo heavy, photo centric, without too many words on. And so my website sort of fired to the top of the listings pretty quickly. And so yeah, that was kind of it. But yeah, that's a little bit of background anyway. So I don't want to talk about me too much.
And you know, for the record, we're not telling any of our listeners to quit school, by the way. Although, you know, there is much to be said for seeking out the business side of education on your own when you have to, if you don't get it in school. You know, I've mentioned on this podcast many times ad nauseum that I went to art school, and that's the first time I picked up a digital camera. That's how I learned about digital photography, and it was a wonderful education. But at the time, I didn't take any business classes. I didn't seek out any business classes because I didn't know that's something that I needed, to be honest. Yeah. And so much of my business education has been after getting out of college, and you know, after I've made just about every single mistake in the book with my photography business. Call that the school of hard knocks, I guess.
That's it. And if I hadn't actually taken a degree in business, I wouldn't have kind of realized the importance. It sounds weird.
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
I wouldn't have realized the importance of understanding business to running a business. I know it sounds insanely obvious that you need to know how to run a business to run a business, but most people go in and think, well, if I'm a good chef, then I'll have a successful restaurant. If I'm mm-hmm. good, if I take nice photographs, I'll have a successful photography career. You know, if I know how to, you know, do plumbing, then I'm going to be a successful plumber. Whatever it may be. It's a business, so you've got to learn how to run a business, and that's the marketing, you know, the selling, and everything else that goes into it. So that was the real advantage of doing it. I kind of knew how important it was. The only slight thing about the university degree was it was kind of almost like too highbrow. It was like I was learning how to merge multinational companies, and I'm like, I don't know how to write a headline yet. I don't need to worry about, you know, merging Coca-Cola and McDonald's just yet. Thanks very much. So yeah, it was for like an 18-year-old, it was like a little
ahead of the game.
Too much, yeah. So anyway. But yeah, stay in school, kids.
and you know, I think I've suggested this book on the show. I'm sure I have. But for anyone who has not read The E-Myth Revisited, that is an excellent book that talks about that exact same premise where when you're going into a business because you're great at a craft, there's so much more that you have to know. And actually, and I don't want to give too much away from the book, but they do focus on telling the story of someone who's great at making pies and baking. And so you can relate that to photography, where friends and family are telling you that you're so talented, you should run a business, start charging and turn it into a business. And in the book, it talks about the downfalls of just focusing on baking pies, or in our case, taking photos. When you're trying to run a business, then, you know, it's like 80% business stuff. So if you're ignoring the business side of running your business, then you are destining yourself. You're setting yourself up for failure, essentially.
Yeah, and it's particularly, again, just before we went live, we were just chatting about this. And it's particularly hard in the photography industry because, you know, there are plumbers and builders and, you know, mechanics. They don't give their work away. So we're competing with free, mm-hmm. Or at least very, very cheap. Whereas, you know, any mechanic, garage or plumber or whatever, they're all going to be charging enough to earn a living. You know, they're all at least starting with, you know, enough to earn a living, and then others, you know, a little bit more than some are more than others, but they're all at least going to survive if they get enough clients. But yeah, with photographers, you're completely free with people that are just kind of doing it for fun or don't realize that they're undercharging because they haven't quite figured out their prices yet. Whereas, yeah, so it's even more important for a photographer to worry about the business side, because there aren't many other businesses like that where you're competing right. with free or next to nothing. So yeah, that just exacerbates the point.
And with that point exactly, it's why I'm so excited to talk to you, to get into the meat and potatoes of our interview today, because we're going to cover ways to increase your booking rates and also just your income in general from photography. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. But first, let's just make sure we're all on the same page. So as far as the area of photography that you would call your expertise, would that be wedding and portrait then?
Yeah, I would say if it's got eyebrows, then I photograph it. Then again, do dogs have eyebrows? I guess they kind of do. yeah, family portraits, weddings, and baby photography. So those are my main things for sure. But yeah, there's the odd pet. Plenty of pets within family portraits, but sometimes the odd pet on its own. But yeah, those three things mainly, though.
Excellent. And now next, I just want to very, very briefly touch on the tools of the trade. This is something I don't want to linger on because I have this podcast because I want to talk about business. But for the benefit of our listeners who are wedding, family, and baby portrait photographers, they're probably curious about what type of gear you're using. So could you briefly give us a rundown of your typical go-to gear for a photo shoot?
Yeah, the most important piece of gear in my toolkit here is actually a Word document. Okay, so it's a bit of it's a Word document. What I've got is a Word document on my computer, and I will get onto the camera in a second, but very quickly here, it's a little Word document, which is all the different things that I say and do for different types of client. So I'll just give you one very quick example, because this one works across basically all different types of photography. I will ask, let's say it's a bride and groom having their romantic photographs. I might ask the groom, you know, what is it you love most about your new bride? Just before I'm sort of taking some photographs. And obviously you could ask the same question to a four-year-old, you know, what do you love most about dad or mum or whatever? And because what we need is that spark. We need that. There's an old expression in photography called ESP, expression sell photographs. And so you want great expressions, you want natural expressions. The word natural comes up all the time when I ask my clients what are they looking for. They want natural photographs, they don't want to look stiff. So what you say is way more important than, you know, was your aperture f8 or f4? Well, you know, yes, it helps, obviously, and you'd need to know your gear. But I want to make sure that I'm getting the right expressions from people and getting them to feel comfortable. Because that's where all my testimonials go. The testimonials go, yeah, the photographs were great, but it's the way we felt. We were worried about it. We thought it was going to be, a bit of a bore or painful in some way, but actually it was fun. So that's my first thing. I've got a whole document of stuff that I do for different things. So that's number one. So if you haven't got that, jot down some things that you could do to entertain your clients. So that's one. But yeah, the boring stuff now. Canon 5D Mark IIs. I've got a couple of those. And Canon 2470 2.8. I've got a big sort of bazooka, the Sigma 100-300 f4. Yes, those are a few of the things that I would like to get a 70-200 2.8, Canon, I'd like one of those. But every time I kind of think, should I get one? Now go on holiday instead.
because you can for the cost of that thing.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I just think, and I know that, you know, I'm already getting really happy clients with all the gear I've got. And as we've been talking about, it's not really a gear. It's the business side that you need to be focusing your energy on. So, yeah, I will get one eventually. But, yeah, I keep just sort of putting it off. I'll probably do it when one day my, you know, I end up with a lens exploding.
Well, we are the secret sauce, right, behind the equipment that we're using. And like you said, it's much more important as far as how we interact with our clients and also the business decisions that we're making, which actually brings me into our next segment, the meat and potatoes of the interview, where I really nerd out. So I'm curious, Dan, tell us, what's been the most challenging aspect of being in business for yourself, and how have you overcome that challenge?
Right. Well, this one is, we'll probably get into the things which you expected me to answer on this question, but on a later question. But actually, one of the biggest challenges I find, certainly now that I've, you know, the phone's ringing all the time I'm able to convert those inquiries into bookings. My problem now actually is managing my time. And I guess when you're starting out, that's not necessarily, actually it's a big problem then as well, you know, you got a full-time job and everything else, but if you're just starting out and not doing this full-time, but it's managing your time. And my wife also works from home, nothing to do with photography, but she does work from home. And so the distractions and so forth that can happen are just, that's what I struggle with. It's, you know, my wife sort of saying, oh, can we just pop out and do some shopping, or can you just go do this, or can you, or she might just want to ask me a couple of questions about something, and you can never quite get into your flow, you know, you're in the middle of writing a blog post or something, and it's constantly, you know, little distractions and so forth. And my dog will probably come up to me and start clawing at my leg going, please take me for a walk. So it's all that stuff. So the solution, I mean, the best you can really do is try and agree in advance what the kind of the boundaries are. And actually that can, for us, because both our jobs are so flexible, and is we actually agree those boundaries almost like on a weekly or even daily basis. It's like, okay, what are you up to today? How can we kind of, you know, make this work today or this week or whatever? So, you know, for us, we couldn't sort of say, you know, I only work from 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. It's just not really going to work in my photography business. So need that flexibility. I do take Mondays off if at all possible. Try and take those off. So you just put those parameters in, and you can change them, as I say, but just trying to get them agreed with, you know, any other significant party in your life. But yeah, for me, time management, and I think that's a big problem for other photographers as well. It might not be the sexiest problem in the world, or the solution, what you want the biggest solutions to, but I mean, there's loads out there on time management. But what another big thing would be to diarize absolutely everything. My mobile phone, which I take everywhere, as everybody else does. My calendar on there, it's just a Google calendar. So it's all backed up online, obviously. And I just got everything. When I walk the dog, every time I have a little thought or an idea or something, goes straight in the calendar so I don't forget it. And then I kind of, at the end of every day or the beginning of every day, I kind of collate everything, plan my day, plan my thoughts, get on top of it, so that my day is kind of being managed and not managing me. So just very quickly, that's the biggest sort of problem, and a couple of sort of minor solutions or little solutions that help me kind of control my life a little bit better and get more done.
And you know, that's a great point about time management being a potential problem for photographers who have a developed photography business and those who are just starting out. Because when you're just starting out, let's say you do have a full-time job during the day and you're doing photography on the side, it can be hard to find time to do everything, because we are trying to do everything. When you're running a business, you're not just the camera operator. You're also the person who has to do the marketing, and maybe you're trying to do, you know, keep up with your financials as well. You're the copywriter. I mean, there's everything that goes into it, and it can be a challenge. And then fast forward years later, when you have a steady flow of clients coming in, and this is something that I've struggled with in 2016, time management, when you have clients coming in, which increases the workload as far as processing, for lack of a better word, processing each client. When someone comes to me and tells me that they're interested in having a business headshot done, that initiates a process of like 25 steps, which I could probably break down into even more steps. But as far as entering their information into Sprout Studio, I use Sprout Studio. Other photographers use, you know, Shootproof and other software. Going back and forth with them via email, getting them set up for their photo session, sending them the contract, getting it signed. Like, there's so much work aside from just taking the photos that when you have a lot of clients coming in, it is so important that you learn how to manage your time. And like you said, setting up boundaries with those around you. If you are working from home, you know, if you have a spouse or children or a dog or a cat, those are all factors. Those are all people and animals that are pulling at your time.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny thing is when I was kind of a part-time photographer and had a full-time job, you know, I could rely on that income of the full-time job. And then when it came to the photography work that I needed to do, I was very laser focused on what is the absolute best thing to take my business forward that I can do today, because it's like I've only got an hour or whatever. Right. You know, I get home in the evening, you have your dinner, and you've got maybe an hour or 2 hours or whatever and you think, right, I need to do this. And it might be the thing that I don't particularly want to do, but I know this is the thing that's going to get me nearer my goal. And of course, when you're trying to become a full-time photographer, you are so much more infused and motivated, because you're like, I really want to do this. I really want to do this.
Like, I
need to get there.
Yeah.
You're exactly. That's a better word. Yeah. You're hungry for it. But once you're there and things are comfortable, yeah, the phone's ringing and it's like, you know, do I really want to go out and get that new business alliance, which is going to bring me in more clients? It's like, well, I kind of got a reasonable steady of stream coming through right now. So now, nah, you know, maybe I'll do that next week. So you can get a little bit, sidetracked onto things which are not quite as critical, because it's like everything's kind of okay, and mm-hmm. that's the danger of sort of okay, sort of the apathy sort of can set in, and so you need to be your own, you know, your own boss, and yeah, manage your time and be tough with yourself, make sure you do the more important things every day. You're thinking, okay, what's going to take my business forward the most today?
So Dan, have you been spying on me like the last year? Because I mean, this is something that for me is very top of mind. You know, it's, and I've been really on my case internally in my head about this, about being complacent. Because like you said, when we get clients, it just becomes easier, you know, to focus on, you have to focus on dealing with the clients that you have, but it makes you less hungry. And then you're less likely to try to form new business alliances or get your name out there, which is it's a trap that we all need to be careful of not falling into.
There's a little hedge outside your house, so I tend to hide in that.
And, I knew it.
Yeah, little pair of binoculars and that. Yeah, so
I knew it.
So you need to do some hoovering, by the way. So just
good to know. Good to know.
Yeah. You just need to just have a quick run around with a Hoover. Yeah. All right.
So. Now I have to ask, what is a Hoover?
A vacuum cleaner.
Oh, Hoover, like the brand. Okay. Yeah, I do need to vacuum, actually. That's on point.
Awesome. I don't know what millimeter lens I'd need to zoom in on you from all the way over here in near Cambridge in the UK, but yeah, it would be a pretty, a million.
Something
millimeter
to use to, like,
focal length. Yeah.
To spy on Justin Bieber, maybe, you know, like the super, super zoom lens. From across the ocean. Awesome. Well, you know, next I'm curious, Dan, tell us, so for the photographers out there who are trying to get more clients, what have you found to be the most effective techniques for increasing your booking rates?
Okay, so for booking specifically, so that you've already got the inquiry kind of coming in, and now, you know, how can you, I know when I started out, I was booking about 33%. It was sort of that, around that sort of one in three were actually booking of me out of all the inquiries I was getting. Mm-hmm. That was the people that I was actually meeting. That's not the actual total number at that point was even lower. Mm-hmm. So I'd meet them, and then only one in three of those people would actually hire me. So now with weddings, it's like 89% of people who meet me book me. It's about 50% of people that get in touch book me. But yeah, 89% of people actually hire me when they meet me. So what it is it's the best way of putting it is, a big decision, like hiring a wedding photographer, for example, is kind of made up of a series of smaller decisions. So, you know, too many photographers try and get the booking straight off their website. And so they're like, here are all my packages. Here are the dates that I've got free. here's everything. You can just sign up here. You reserve your date and you don't even need to speak to me. I'll turn up on the day for the photography, but, but I wish I could pay somebody else to do that. It's almost like so hands off and so kind of impersonal, that, you know, that's just not the way to get the right kind of clients. Yeah. You might get the people that kind of go, oh, well, actually you're cheaper than everybody else, so I'll perhaps go for this person. But, if you want to get good quality clients, then you've got to think of it like eating the elephant a bite at a time, just a series of small decisions. So I don't have any prices on my website, which you could do a whole webinar on its own, but I don't. I know there are photographers that are successful that do. I know there are photographers that are successful which have sort of little bits of prices, like prices from. But, you know, it's a part of the process. I wouldn't kind of, I would very much, if you're struggling on any level, I would very much not have all of your prices on there, because, you know, the people that are going to look at that, look at websites and book purely based on what they see on a website, they're just going to go to maybe 5-10 photographer websites. They're going to look and compare. They're going to say, well, I like the work of these 3 or 4 photographers, so that one seems to be cheaper, so I'll go for them. Because they're not getting to know you yet. They're not getting a feel for your passion, your personality, what makes you different from all the other photographers. Yes, you may write what makes you different from the other photographers on your website, but you can't guarantee they're actually going to read that. If you put you've got a page called prices or packages, they're probably going to go straight to that and have a look through. So you're almost like forcing them to choose your own price. I made the mistake. I did that. I used to have all the packages up there, so it's not like I've never done it. I've been there, and I took them all off thinking I'll never get another call again. In fact, I started getting more calls, because why were they calling? They wanted to know what the prices were.
Mm-hmm,
So they rang me up to say, you know, I like your work. I like what the sound of what you do. But, you know, can you let me know what your prices are? So that's the first step. You're getting them off your website and onto either email or telephone. Then you can kind of, if they email you and say, what are your prices? Then you need to try and get them onto your telephone. Mm-hmm. Because, again, if you're just going to email them the price list, you may as well have just had it on the website in the first place. just what's the difference, basically? So I have a whole kind of what we call an email drip campaign, which is like a series of kind of pre-written emails which drip out over a period of, you know, a few days or, you know, a week or so. So that basically asks them to, each email gives them some helpful information and also asks them to call me.
So when you begin sending them this drip email campaign, is that after they've contacted you via phone or email asking for your pricing, or?
Yeah, so it's kind of, say, it's like a series of small steps. So the first step is they go to your website and they like you enough to get in touch. Often it's an email. It's about 50-50 for me. About 50% of people get in touch email and about another 50% telephone, or at least email with a telephone number. And obviously I call them back if they include their telephone number. So the people that email me, my only objective is to get them to call me, because, you know, I'm not going to book anybody over email. I don't want to book anyone over email, because I want to check that we're a good fit for each other.
Right.
And so I'm basically saying, obviously we're not going to read you the whole email, but it's basically along the lines of, apart from the preamble, you know, congratulations and thanks for getting in touch and all that kind of stuff. We're going to say, once we get to the price bit, I'm going to say, absolutely, I'd be delighted to go through, you know, the different packages and so forth. But if you give me a quick call, then I'll be happy to go through things with you. It'll be a lot quicker and a lot easier to explain, because, you know, we've got all these different packages, and a lot of people get confused about what's what. So it's along those lines. So that's kind of saying, you're not saying, oh, I don't want to give you more prices. You basically say, absolutely, it'll be a lot quicker and clearer over the telephone. So give me a quick call and I'll be happy to go through it. And I'll also kind of drop in there some, you know, reasons that make me different, because they may not have read them on the website. So it's kind of, you know, reiterating that. So, you know, for example, if we're talking about family portraits, then I might say one of the things that I do is I meet all my clients before they hire me, so I can plan the session, find out exactly what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that kind of thing. So it's a cross between being helpful but also asking them to get in touch. Okay, now some people, they won't, they will just think, no, give me the prices. If you don't give me the prices, I'm not going to get in touch. That's fine, they may well not have been a good fit for me anyway, but I'm not, and my email's pretty kind of, as I say, pretty much pre-written, although I do personalize the first sort of sentence or so for each person. So that gets them onto the telephone, and then once they're on the telephone, then they can that's when you really start to build the rapport, because you can ask questions and you're not being salesy. You're actually saying, oh, you know, congratulations on your wedding. Let's take a wedding for this one. Congratulations on your wedding. You know, tell me about your wedding. What are you going to be up to? And they'll start to tell you, and so what's important to you about your wedding. What's important to you about your wedding photography? What's important to you about your wedding photographer? So you're showing that you care about what they're after. You're not just going, well, I have package A and that includes this, that, and the other, and package B includes this, that, and the other. You're finding out what they're looking for, and you're showing that you care, and that's really what people want to know. They think they want to know what your prices are, but actually they just want to know, is this photographer going to be a real pain on our wedding day, or are they actually going to be a pleasure to be around? And are they kind of in the right ballpark? And can we afford them at all? If they're in the right ballpark? And then, yeah, I give them like a ballpark figure. So if it's a wedding, it's like prices are from X. But then I'll sort of say we can go through things in much more detail in person. I'm happy to pop over and see you, or you can come and see me, and we'll go through things in a lot more detail there. But you've got that to-ing and fro-ing. You're asking them questions. And if they ring up and say, you know, what are your prices, right at the beginning, say, hi, I'm Margaret, and I'd like to know how much your wedding packages are. I'm going to do the same thing like I did on the email. Say, oh, absolutely, yeah. I'll be happy to go through that in 2 seconds. But do you mind if I ask you a few quick questions so I can find out what you're looking for? And now you're in control of the conversation. You're asking the questions. And, of course, it makes sense, you know. How can you give them a price if you don't know what they want? You know, do they want an engagement session? Do they want an album? Do they want, you know, two albums? Do they want, you know, parent albums? What if you don't know what they want? So you can't really say a price.
Exactly.
It'd be like ringing up a garage and sort of saying, how much are your cars? Well, what do you want, sir? do you want a family car? Do you want a sports car? Well, you know, give me some help here. And it's like when I go to I don't know anything about cars myself. And when I need a new tire for my car, I go in to get, you know, get the tire, and they say, well, what tire do you want? I don't know. I don't know anything about tires. So I'm like, well, one that lasts a long time. I'm not really like a boy racer. I don't really care if it can go around a corner 300 miles an hour. I just want one that's not kind of really cheap. It's sort of middle of the road and it's going to last a long time. So it's that kind of thing. You want to ask questions, and they start to think, they like you, and that you care. And then, of course, they'll mention things like, when you say, you know, what's important to you about your wedding, they might say, well, we, you know, the photography is important to us, but we're just a bit worried. We hear a lot of horror stories, and, you know, we're just a bit worried about who to choose because there's so many photographers out there. Let's just say they say that. Then you can say, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I have a guarantee that if you're not happy with your photographs and the service that you receive, you can get all your money back, for example. So that's something that I do, which is a little bit unique.
Yeah.
And if you can be a little bit unique. That segues, you see. It's not just me kind of saying, I do this and I do that and my service is great because of this and because of that. It's good. I've asked them a question, they've responded, I've listened, and then responded to their response with something relevant, which makes me sound good. So I'm not just saying, hey, I've got a guarantee. I'm saying it because they've kind of said something which makes it relevant for me to bring that up, if that makes sense. So I'm not being salesy. I'm being more helpful.
And what I like is that it's really building a relationship with that potential client. And it even, so your process, it really decommoditizes you from the rest of the market. When you were talking about if you have your pricing up on your website, which, you know, like you said, some people choose to have it up on their website, some people don't. I tend to go back and forth. Right now I'm in a phase where I recently took it off. And I'll get to that in a minute. But you mentioned if you have the pricing on your website, and then a potential client checks out your pricing, and then 6 or 7 other photographers in the area, when they make that decision just based on price, that does turn you into a commodity. So actually getting them on the phone and showing them that you care and that you're able to ask questions and build rapport, that goes a long way towards making you stand out from other photographers in your area.
Yeah, and it's all about relationships. I mean, photography is such a personal one-to-one service. Particularly wedding photography. I mean, you're going to be with them for like 10 hours on one of the most important days of their life. They don't want you to be somebody that's going to stress them out or be irritating. Any photographer that's even half decent could probably put together a reasonable portfolio on their website, and that's one of the dangers. So how do they know that you're reliable? Well, they really need to see an entire album's worth of photographs. They really need to dig a lot deeper. So one of the marketing things that I've done in the past, and I've done blog posts, and I've been doing a Facebook advert recently, because obviously this is top booking time for weddings this time of year, is my Facebook advert basically says the 9 questions to ask any wedding photographer before you hire them.
Mm.
So it's not anything about, hey, I'm Dan Waters, creative photography, and I've got £300,000 off my package at the moment, and prices slashed. It's none of that. It's like, these are the 9 questions you need to ask your wedding photographer before you hire them. So
really,
it's like it's
that.
Helpful. It's not salesy. And then that, if they click on the advert, it takes them through to a blog post, which is it's a long blog post. It's about 2,000 words. It's got a little bit of humor in there. It's got lots of useful information. And so by the time they get to the bottom of that blog post, they're thinking, that's useful. And also, Dan, actually, because obviously all the questions are slightly angled towards my service and what makes me different, like the guarantee, and my wedding albums have can comfortably get 250 photographs in it, so you don't have to kind of leave out Auntie Mavis and explain to her that you want to put your mates in instead so she didn't make the cut. So I put in a little bit of humor, but also it's kind of logical as well. So it's kind of a bit of emotion, a bit of humor, a bit of logic, and people by the end they're thinking, all right, well, that makes sense, so maybe I should just give Dan a call. It's again completely different to the sort of approach most photographers would take with a Facebook advert, which is normally package A is this much, but now it's this much,
right? And I've tried that approach, it hasn't worked for me.
Yeah, it just sounds a little bit like I can't seem to book anybody at that price. Unless you can, I mean, I'll say you can't do price promotion, but it's best if you give a reason why. It's like, maybe it's a discount because for any, midweek weddings, or maybe it's discounted because your album supplier has got a promotion on and you're passing on the savings. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Not just kind of discounting just for the sake of it, because then that obviously makes it sound like you're getting desperate, and then
right.
They wonder why you're desperate.
And before I forget, I wanted to share, I mentioned, so right now, and this came to mind as you were talking, I recently took the pricing off of my website as an experiment, because just last week I was talking to someone in insurance. No, she wasn't insurance. What was she? From a title agency. And she had inquired 6 months ago. She asked me about getting some headshots done of her team. And at the time, we were at a networking meeting, and I said, sure, let's meet up and talk about that. Well, I never followed up. And it turns out that she had gone to my website and looked at my pricing and had gotten confused about my pricing. And so we actually ended up meeting, fast forward 6 months later, roughly, to last week. We ended up meeting and she mentioned this. And so I took the opportunity to go through my pricing with her, and she was shocked because what she thought a session would cost for her whole team was hundreds of dollars off, actually. Enough to scare her away in the past, because she had just looked at my pricing and had gotten scared. So there is absolutely something to be said for meeting face-to-face with your potential clients and explaining not just your pricing, but the value that they get with that. Because if you do leave it up to them, then, some photographers make it work. So I'm not saying you should never have pricing up on your website, but you do run the risk of leaving it up to them and then them not understanding your pricing or getting yeah. caught into the whole who's the cheapest photographer game.
That's it. I'm glad you brought that up because I had a very similar experience. And it was when I was part-time still, and one of my colleagues in my day job was interested in having some family photographs. And so, bizarrely, I sent her my price list, even though she sat next to me in the office. And I sent her my price list, and because I didn't want to kind of seem like, yeah, well, you know, I didn't want to be too kind of pushy. That's how I felt at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I just sent her the price list, and she went away, and nothing happened. And then, like a couple of months later, she mentioned, oh, you know, I'm really sorry I haven't got back to you about the family portraits, but I didn't really understand your prices. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, let's go, you know, and I went through it all in person, and she understood it, and she booked me, and it turned out to be a decent sale. And people get confused, and I think the people that do put prices on the website and actually are kind of doing okay with it tend to be the ones that are so successful anyway that they actually just use it just so they don't get any calls from people who are just not appropriate. So, you know, the people who are charging, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 for wedding photography, that kind of thing, they just got recommendation after recommendation, and it's just, you know, they just don't need hardly the inquiries coming through Google. They're just, that's not their bread and butter, so they're happy to scare people off, frankly.
Yeah, I have heard it does help weed people out, the clients who really don't want to pay much at all.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I suppose, you know, how much time does it take to speak to somebody for who's not right for you? You know, within 5 or 10 minutes, you know, they're not going to be right. And, okay, that's 5 or 10 minutes of your time wasted. But some people have started out, they were on the phone and you're thinking, this isn't going to go well. But they do end up booking you. And because they kind of go into your funnel and they start to get educated, and you meet up with them and you plan the session and they enjoy the session and they love the photographs, and then you're showing them, I'm taking a family portrait example here, and then you show them the photographs in person and the excitement built, and they end up actually being a good client when maybe initially they didn't sound like they're going to be, but because they've kind of gone through your system, they end up being a good one. Right. And you shouldn't be too quick to it's hard sometimes because when you're busy you're thinking this isn't going to be a good fit, this person, and you just almost want to get them off the phone, but you have to again fight your instincts and kind of go, no, I'm going to give everybody a good fair crack of the whip. I'm going to, you know, if they have any price objections, I'm going to try and overcome those objections, and I'm going to, you know, give them a fair chance to hire me, because you can convert many people who you think aren't going to be a good fit for you. So
when you get people on your list, do you ask their permission then? Like when you have them on the phone, so when they go to your website, they call you or email you, but either way you get them on a phone call. Let's say they're not ready yet to put down a deposit or take that next step with you. Is that at that point when you ask them, hey, can I send you more information, so that they know to expect emails from you?
Yeah, so that's a really good question, because I suppose I didn't really finish the step-by-step booking process, really. So once they're on the phone, my goal is then to meet them in person. They're not trying to hire me on the phone. So I'm basically, for family portraits, I will tend to go to their home. And I meet them there. Again, that's a really small step. So I'm saying, let's say they ring up and they say, what are your prices? And I say, yeah, I'll be happy to go through my prices. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions first? And I ask a few questions about the family and what they're looking for, et cetera, et cetera. And then a bit of later on in the conversation, I say, right, let me give you an idea of how much, you know, you can plan on investing in these photographs. I'll give them an idea, and they may say, that's a bit outside my budget, and then I'll deal with some some of their objections. And but my goal will always be, let's just meet up. It's at your home. You don't even need to get out of your pajamas if you don't want to. And so I'll come to you. Just give you an opportunity to have a little chat. Go through my portfolio. Let me know what you like, what you don't like. We can chat about what clothing's going to work well in photography and what doesn't work. We talk about locations, et cetera. So, but it just gives you that opportunity to find out a little bit more, but and I can show you some samples of my work, because it's very difficult on a website to know exactly what you'd be getting. So mm-hmm. so I sort of angle it like that, and then to say, how are you fixed for next Wednesday at 3:30, and we just take it from there, really. And most bit, if I get somebody on the phone, it's very rare that I don't get to meet them in person, because it's so simple. Unless they want photographs for like £50, and they're like, well, all I've got is £50, and that's it. Then they're going to go probably. But most of the time, I can get the in-person chat. And what I tend to find is most people, when they go through this sort of system, and I start showing them photographs in person, they end up spending about three times more than they initially planned. You know, so those £200, everything's in pounds for me, I'm sorry, but just have to add on about, what was it, 70% these days, for your dollars.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is. So we're going down and down and down over here. So a £200 order could be a £600 order, and a £500 order ends up being a £1,500 order, and so forth. So I tend to find most people kind of end up doing around triple what they maybe planned, double or triple.
Wow.
So but it's because they're involved now, and it's these little steps, and they're kind of they're starting to understand what this is all about. They're starting to see the quality, they're starting to see what makes you different, they're starting to like you and build that relationship. And the excitement builds, the education builds, and but just a little bit each step of the way. So it's not like you're throwing everything at them in one go.
Right.
You're building it up. And then by the end, they've met you, they've seen your website, they probably emailed you, then they spoke to you on the phone, then you went to their house and chatted with them, then you planned a time to do the photography, then you met up to show them photography, then you delivered the photographs, or they collected them, whatever. That's seven steps. that's seven times they've kind of been in touch with you here. So they kind of, you get invited to their barbecues by that point. So, yeah.
And then they have children, and then they call you for baby photos.
Yeah, exactly. And by then, as I say, you've got that relationship, and they know your name. They'll remember your name. Obviously, you're going to keep in touch with them via email and Facebook and everything else, but you're kind of like, they know you now. Whereas if you're just a shoot and burn photographer who books them online, turns up for the photographs for like an hour, and then posts them a CD or something, they've met you once, they won't even remember your name tomorrow. So
right,
that relationship's gone, and you're not gonna cement yourself in there as their family photographer, or their wedding photographer for their extended family. You really need to sort of look at it as a personal one-on-one business. And it's maybe an extra couple of steps and maybe an extra couple of hours, but actually in my system there's a few areas where you save time. For example, if you're doing just give you an example, if you're doing a shoot and burn type model, and you're giving them, let's say you're giving them 50 photographs, that's 50 photographs you got to retouch.
Yes.
Essentially. Do you know what I mean? And that's a lot of time. Whereas if you're going down the route of getting them excited and interested in having maybe one or two photographs to their wall, one or two photographs kind of, one for the desk at work, and one for the bedroom bedside table or something, but it's four or five photographs that they're ordering from you, then that's four or five photographs you've got to retouch, mm-hmm. not 50. So you're actually clawing back a lot of time there as well. So But because you've taken these extra steps and you've built up the relationship, your orders will be much, much higher. And yeah, even if you did have to invest a little bit of extra time, it's well worth, worth it because your orders are higher. And they remember you again, like I was saying, you become, and you're different from everybody else. Because let's face it, everybody else is doing this. Well, not everybody else, you know what I mean, but the majority doing the shoot and burn model, or the putting them online model, and keeping their clients kind of at arm's length, whereas I'm just like, no, come in, let's chat, let's meet, let's have a Jaffa cake.
Awesome. So I'm going
You have Jaffa
to.
cakes? Sorry, do you have Jaffa cakes?
We do not.
Oh, yeah, I'm just coming out of all these angle-sized things that you're just gonna. Sorry. So yeah, Jaffa cakes are just like biscuits, basically.
Okay, I was picturing like a sweet soft cake. I don't know. It was making me
Yeah, they've
hungry.
got this kind of jelly, kind of marmalady jelly center, but they're very popular here. But they probably sound disgusting to you, but
Actually,
they're
it sounds
actually.
amazing right now.
Anyway, I've gone off at a tangent,
Well, I
but.
do want to. I'm going to recite the seven steps back to you. Tell me if I have it correct, okay? So, number one, you want the person to go to your website. Number two, they either email or they call you. And if they email, the goal is to get them onto a call. So, in my notes here, I have step number three as them on the phone with you. A call is happening. And you begin that phone conversation, or rather, I should say, you begin the conversation of pricing, during this call. And
Yeah.
number four, did I skip? Okay, wait, what was number four?
Number four is you meet them in person.
Okay, I
So
had that as
for me,
five.
yeah. So after it basically goes marketing. So our example was a website, but obviously it could be, could be something else. They see your marketing, then they go to the. A lot of people email you. If they email you, and don't leave a telephone number. Then you're going to send them like an email drip campaign. And there's lots of services out there that do these drip campaigns. There's like Aweber, there's Mad Mimi,
Yeah, MailChimp.
there's loads of them. So and that will then hopefully get them to actually call you. And then once you're on the phone, you're correct. You give them a ballpark figure. And so for a wedding, that would be prices from. So you're not going to go through detailed packages or anything. You're just going to go prices. Yeah, prices for all day coverage start at X. For family portraits, what I tend to do is I halve my kind of my average, and then go up to my average. So price you can expect to invest between X and Y, and because that is actually what kind of most people do. But it's the bigger orders that you get. Less often, but they're really nice orders, and they kind of bring all the averages up nicely, if you know what I mean. So yeah, most people fall in between that sort of 50% under your average, up to your average, and then yeah. So that's roughly what I kind of ballpark them for families, and then my goal there, and with weddings, is to get them to then meet me, and. Most people do meet me, and then obviously the meeting. Then it's about getting them to physically hire me. That's obviously when we get into real detail about everything, packages. What do they want exactly? Go through my portfolio, and that's where you don't want any misunderstandings or anything. So we're fully detailed there. But yeah, so
And
that's how it
then, and
goes.
so for the in-person meeting, that's step number four. So for step five, would that be the session day, the wedding day, the family portrait day itself?
Yeah, there's kind of a half a step in between, which is scouting the place.
Oh, okay. I don't want to, is if this is all within your product, then I don't want to give away everything then. This
Oh
is
yeah, but
really
there's
good stuff.
no problem. I mean, each of these little steps has got, many nuances and different things you can say. I mean, I've given you a few little examples of things that I might say, but there are many other ways these conversations can go, and there's many, you know, there's all sorts of different variables, I guess. So, but yeah, I'll go scout the venue if it's a wedding, or the location if it's, you know, a family portrait session. Obviously, if it's a studio style session, then I don't need to do that. But I tend to prefer outdoor sessions, ideally somewhere that's meaningful to the client, because they connect with the location. I mean, like a white background studio photograph, a white background's a white background, doesn't really mean anything to them. So whereas if it's a place that they've gone many times as a family, they're going to have that connection with that location. So it's going to be like an extra character in the photograph. So that's why I prefer that. So I'll scout that location if I've never been there before, look for the best spots, look at the same time of day as I will be doing the sessions. I know where the light's going to be, and just kind of plan that out. And I tend to go I actually end up with a little mini portfolio on my mobile phone of ideas for that particular family or wedding. And it's like a bunch of different photographs that I know they like, and I've also photographed the different locations at the wedding venue or at the family portrait location. I'm kind of going around with my mobile phone just going, okay, we can do something here, do something here, do something here. And then, so I've got like a little portfolio of photographs that they like and locations that will work well. And I obviously put the two things together on the day of the photography. I'm also armed on the day of the photography with all those funny things that I like to say and do to get a nice natural reaction from the from the client, and yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff, and that's always growing and growing. And then obviously the day of the photography, and then I invite them over to see the photographs. I use a projector to project the photographs so I can see them at a decent size. I'll skip a little bit because I think you might be asking me a question about that later. There's a little mini thing there which is to do with software, and then then obviously I take their order basically. Although actually with weddings, I tend to get everything kind of paid up front.
Right. Mm-hmm.
With weddings, it tends to be that they want my album, and it's got 250 photographs, which is basically all of the ones they get anyway. So, and that's more than enough to tell the story of a wedding day. I always get a little bit suspicious when a wedding photographer saying, "I'll give you like 1,000 photographs," and I think, "Well, it's a camera, not a machine gun." So anyway, it's 250 photographs. So I show them the photographs and go, before I start, you know, just remember you are getting all of these photographs I'm about to show you. So you don't have to. So I'm not going through a whole new sales process when I'm showing wedding clients. Obviously, I am with the families. With the families, yeah, it's a different process. I'm showing them each photograph one at a time.
Then
it's a whole thing together.
Overall, then, it's really what I'm seeing is I'm looking at like my two pages of notes here. is that you're building a relationship with these people and taking them through a series of small steps, kind of like when you go on a date with somebody.
I guess
that depends on the person, you know, but a lot of times you go on a date and if they want to take it all the way to, you know, like through second base, third base, fourth, you know, like that can be a bit much, right? It's like, hey, let's get to know each other. Let's say hello, you know, before trying to go all the way. Not trying to get graphic here, you know.
Yeah. But maybe we should get our clients drunk. Maybe that's where all we need to be doing. We need to free beer for every inquiry.
It's all part of the bonding process, right?
Yeah. I'm gonna play around with that idea. Yeah, well, actually, with the wedding ones, normally when they come around to see the photographs, so, you know, I've got a bottle of wine out or something. So,
that's
classic. But they're already paid for everything by then, so it's kind of pointless. It's just...
And so,
anyway.
With my next question for you, I kind of feel like you've answered this question already, unless you were going to take it in a different... on a different angle. So I'm curious, then, so... What have you found to be the most effective techniques for increasing your income? Because that's also your specialty.
Yeah, so having a system like what we've been talking about is kind of key, because It's a bit like having a car, you know. If a car works because all those little bits and pieces work together. If one little thing isn't working, like you got a flat tire, then the whole thing comes kind of grinding to a halt. And so just one little thing can really screw things up. So, yeah, having a system that's kind of proven to work really does help. But mm-hmm. if I just pick out a few things, real key things, which your listeners will find perhaps most helpful. The number one decision I would say that any photographer needs to make, portrait type photographer, and the biggest thing that happened to me was to show my family portrait clients their photographs in person. That was the biggest thing, hands down. That did triple my what I was doing before was CDs, burning CDs. I did put online sometimes, but most people go, well, if you're offering a CD, I'll just have the CD. Thanks very much. When I switched from CDs, and at the time it was like £150 for a CD, right, of all the photographs, and that was, so what's that, about $250, I would imagine. Wow. About $250. So that's what I was doing there. And then so I I bought a projector and just I thought, right, from now on I'm going to show my clients their photographs in person, because lots of people who seem to know a lot better than me are telling me to do this. So I'm going to give it a go, and I'm a bit scared about doing it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because, you know, we're all a bit scared about it, because it's like, well, what if they don't like the photographs? Yeah, what if they don't like the photographs? I've got to stare at them face to face and deal with that. If you're service oriented in your photography, which I hope everybody is, then you want to know about problems. You don't want them talking about behind your back. You want to deal with it and do whatever it takes to fix the problem. Right. Anyway, exactly. So I did it, and my next sale was 593, I think it was. It was around about the £600 mark. So what's that? That's about $1,000. And the one after that was about $1,200 and something. Pounds. So that's about $2,000. Those are my next two. I'm not going to say that they were all like that from then on. That's not the case. What I've found time and again with people that go from either online, which is probably the worst thing you can do, or CDs, is, you know, at least tripling. Whatever you're doing now, whether you're doing it £100 now or £400 now is your average, you're probably going to start around about tripling, doubling. Some people are more, some people are a bit less, but it's a huge impact. I mean, who wouldn't want to have those kinds of improvements to your figures?
Absolutely. So then what's been the most common mistake that you see professional portrait photographers make today?
We probably touched on a few of them. Prices on the website is probably not the biggest one, but I definitely selling photographs online, or just focusing on selling CDs only. I do digital options, but I'm not kind of focused on the digital. That's not what I talk about. When I'm meeting up with people, I'm showing them, if it's the family portraits, when I go there, I'm bringing like 30 inch by 20 inch and above, beautifully framed and printed wall portraits, stuff that's going to get them excited. I'm not giving them any price. The digital options aren't even on my price list, because I just don't. I have options for that, and I've played around with different ideas. One I'm playing with at the moment is actually saying, you know, if you want digital option, then it's basically the same size as same price as a print. And I just resize the digital file to the size of that print. So if they bought it as a 7x5, then they can't print it at like 30x20, because it will just be pixelated. So I'm playing with that idea and say, look, you can take these photographs however you want, but you know what I really believe in and specialize in, and I feel my clients enjoy the most, is having something, you know, beautifully finished, professionally, you know, framed, and something for your wall where you're going to see it every day, and you know, you're going to see your family smiling back at you, looking the happiest and best they've ever been. And that's what I believe in. So I don't, you know, I don't advise the CD option. Basically, it's the same price. Like, you can get digital files. So that's kind of the approach I'm taking at the minute. But yeah, I generally don't. That's if they're kind of really pushing on it. I said, well, you can do it. But I tend to just, most people build up the CD thing in their head a little bit. I mean, when I say people, I mean photographers. They're like, everybody wants a CD. And it's probably more of an issue with weddings, I'll admit. But with family portraits, so they see the frame portraits and they see the prints and they know they want something for the wall anyway. And when I sort of say, well, do you really want a CD of, like, you know, loads and loads of photographs? I mean, you're not going to be wallpapering your house. What you want is some, you know, you want just, and they actually like this because it's almost like anti-selling. You just want one or two or three beautiful photographs of your family that of a decent size so you can actually see their faces, and that you're just absolutely in love with. So why would you want another 50 when they're just going to sit in a drawer? What are you going to do? There's nothing you can physically do with that many other than an album. And if you'd like an album, I can do an album for you.
Right.
But it's like, so when you actually kind of explain and go through it in a nice, you know, nice tone of voice and not being confrontational and you're kind of understanding and everything, then most people kind of go, yeah, I'll take your point, and they're fine. And often they just want something for Facebook. Like, yeah, you know, you can have, I'll give you some low resolution for Facebook, no problem. Weddings, as I say, a little bit different, because it is more of a, they do need a whole bunch of photographs, obviously, because it's a wedding. It's not, they're not after just one, two, three, four photographs. They're after, you know, a lot. So, that's a little bit different, and I just obviously then include them in packages, the digital options in packages. I do that, but I actually try and lean them more towards the Animotos type of thing. You know Animoto, like the, I call them slideshows on steroids. And so I include Animoto standard in many of my packages, and then almost like the CD is not in there, and they go, oh, doesn't it have high resolution images? And I say, oh yeah, you can do that for it. And it's like an extra. So it's almost like an add on. So yeah, I handle it a little bit different with weddings than families, but, yeah.
That is awesome.
So that was what we're talking about, the mistakes.
Sorry,
I get excited and then I kind of go off on one.
And I totally see why, because I mean, that's an expensive mistake, right? I mean, the first time that I got the guts to do in-person sales, it was a 4-figure sale for me, which for me was huge at the time. And you know, I had been putting off for years selling to people in person because it was intimidating. And so I finally got in my mind that I would give it a try, I'd give it a shot, and I walk into the client's home and I'm physically nauseous. I mean, terrified. And they were awesome. You know, to their credit, they, from the beginning, we'd been having the discussion about hanging up a wonderful piece of art on their wall. And so when I came in for that in-person sale, they were ready to buy. I mean, it was probably the easiest sale ever, even though I was nervous and had butterflies in my stomach. But I stumbled out of there one day, and it was like my eyes were opened. I'm like, why have I not been doing this? So, you know, for the photographers who are listening and you haven't tried in-person sales, you know, especially if you're a portrait photographer, family, weddings, you know, it's absolutely something that you should consider. And if it makes you uncomfortable, then that probably means you're on to something, actually, because that's really where the magic happens.
Yeah, and it's about offering a better service to your clients, differentiating your business. And the thing is that they already know your prices. So because I've met with them in person, I've sat down, shown them my samples, gone through my prices in person. So it's not like they don't know the prices.
Right.
They know the prices. So it's not a price. It's not awkward in terms of price. The main thing that could be awkward, I suppose, is if, say, they didn't like the photographs. But if you're creating photographs that your clients don't like, then, you know, that's an issue anyway.
Right, you've got other problems.
You've got different problems. It's not your business. That's perhaps the issue. It's actually your photography, and you need to maybe go back and look at that. Or maybe you're doing the wrong stuff. You maybe not sitting down with them and finding out what they're looking for. You're just doing what you like and then hoping they like it, rather than kind of going, okay, which of these photographs in my portfolio do you like? Which ones do you not like? And then you kind of, you plan it. And you're planning everything else, the clothing, the location. And once you've got a plan, you're much more likely to get better photographs because, you're working towards an end goal that you know that they're going to like. So that's what, you talk about being scared. I mean, I was that, as I mentioned earlier, I'm 5'6". I was that little funny looking kid that got bullied at school. And, so as probably most kids who got bullied at school, they kind of carry some of those little issues on into later life. That was me. I was shy for many years as an adult, and but because of that, and I just, photography has been great because it's forced me to stand in front of many times lots of people and just get used to it. Mm-hmm. 100 people at a wedding, 200 people at a wedding, whatever. I've got to entertain them, I've got to make them laugh, I've got to help them feel relaxed when it's actually me that was scared. I've got to sit there, not only get over my own fears, but actually make them get over theirs as well. What's wonderful is you get, after a wedding or after a family portrait session or after you've had a good order, you go, I have come a long way, and that's a great feeling. That's where the job satisfaction really kicks in. It's like, do you know what, I'm doing this, and I never thought I could. I never thought I could stand in front of, 10 people and talk for any length of time, let alone a wedding full, and then entertain them at the same time and all the rest of it. So you get an enormous amount of satisfaction from it, and personally, and then when you do get that check, or they give you your credit card for that order, which is 2, 3, 5, 10 times. I mean, I said earlier, 1,300 or so, 200 and something was my second pounds, was my second in-person sale. And it was 150 was all I ever got before that. So it's nearly 10 times. And imagine my little hand was shaking when they were like, okay, so let me write you I think it was a check back then, and I didn't even have a card reader at that time. I was like, because nobody needed nobody really needed to put anything on a card because I wasn't charging enough hardly to warrant it. So they were just, do you want some cash? These people were like, okay, so who do I make the check out to? I'm like, I'm really going to get this money. Right. I can't believe it.
Trying to play it cool.
Yeah, exactly. And you're trying to not have that stupid grin on your face.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
It's exciting on many levels. And then they leave you a nice testimonial as well. It's like, I got that money. I had a wonderful experience. And they're telling me how happy they are. It's like, it's a win-win-win-win-win. It's great. And it's the service that they always comment on. It's always like, Dan's the first photographer who's kind of gone the extra mile. He does all these extra things. And I've had, when I've seen wedding prospects to sort of show them my portfolio and chat with them and so forth, many times I'll say, nobody else has sat here for like over an hour. We're nearly an hour and a half now. And the other photographers are just going to come bowling in, show us like 4 different albums and tell us, and 4 different packages, and say, what do you want? And they didn't ask us any of these questions. And so it's service. And so let's try and get that horrible kind of notion that selling and marketing is all about being sleazy. I think it's about helping people. I call it customer service before they've bought. That's my little phrase
like that.
for it. It sort of puts you on the right path. It's not like, how can I trick somebody into spending more money? It's about how can I offer a better service so that they're actually happy
Exactly.
to. So, and am I going to turn away some people who are just not, that's not for them? Yep, probably, but I'll also attract the people that do want something a little bit more special. So that's good.
Absolutely. Ah, okay, this interview has been awesome. Oh my goodness. I am
Thank you.
sad because we're coming to the end of the interview. But before we go, could you tell us if there is a particular photography resource, tool, online course, book, etc., that you would recommend to our listeners to help with their photography businesses?
Yeah, so earlier I mentioned, I'll skip this bit because I think I might bring it up later. And I mentioned it was a piece of software. There's a piece of software called ProSelect. I don't know if any of you, your listeners, have heard of it, but it's for family portraits, really, and it's a sales tool. So it's not like it doesn't do anything to your photographs per se, but what it does is, when I go to my client's home to see if they want to hire me, I photograph the walls in their house, and I photograph the wall with like a ruler or a tape measure or something that I know the length of. Take that photograph, upload it into the software, and then the photographs from their actual photography session, assuming they end up hiring me, I upload those into the software as well, and I can actually plonk their plonk, that's not a very good word, is it? I can display their photographs from their session onto the walls of their home to scale. Because I had that ruler in there, and like the software can calibrate the photograph kind of thing to size, and my supplier's frames, my frame supplier is affiliated with the software, and therefore you can put my supplier's frames around it like this digitally, but it's kind of showing them around the photograph, so they can see what size is going to look right for that particular wall space. It's going to show them what color, at least. I mean, they're digital frames, so they're not perfect color fit, but it lets them know, oh, do I want a black frame or a light brown or a dark brown or whatever. And if they want to do like a grouping of several photographs on wall space or several photographs in one frame, they can kind of see what it would look like and what's the best arrangement. So that's a really cool piece of software. It's not cheap, to be fair. It's like, I don't know what it is actually. It's about maybe £300, something like that. So we'll say about $500. So it's not cheap, to be fair. But
So it could pay for itself, basically,
yeah,
with like one or
it's one of
two
those. It's yeah. It's
in-person
not what. It's
sales.
not like. It's not like buying a lens or something. Which, you know, again, I've been putting off buying my new lens because it's not really going to make me any more money. None of my clients have ever come to me and said, Dan, why do you not use a 2.8 on your long lens? Because, you know, that's going to give it a much, you know, it's got, the bokeh background is going to look, you know, it's going to give it a different effect. Nobody's ever said that. But they have said, wow, this software is amazing. But better than that, they go, I tell them, when I put their photographs up, I say, let me know what size you feel is appropriate for this space, this wall space. And of course, if they're looking at an 8x10, it looks totally lost above a sofa. It's just like, it's ridiculous. And so they're going, oh no, go bigger, 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 bigger. But if I just put it online, they think an 8x10 or, you know, 8x12 or something like that, that's a big photograph, because they're not used to seeing anything bigger than that, really. So, but on the software, they're going, oh right, no, we're definitely going to need something bigger than that, aren't we? And they're like, yeah, you probably want to get. And so they're selling themselves. I can just sit there almost quietly. So I don't have to sit there and go, oh no, you're going to have a much bigger photograph than that, because otherwise you won't be able to see their faces. I can, yeah, just demonstrate. I can show them what it would look like. So yeah, I love that piece of software. It's great. And it's well worth the investment. As soon as you go to in-person sales, you'll be able to pay for it in no time. So.
That is awesome. And, you know, finally, my my last final question to you, but definitely one of the most important. Tell us where we can find you online.
There's two places, basically. There's my photography website itself, which is where obviously I'm getting my clients from. That's danwaterscreative.com. And I think there'll probably be a bio somewhere below this podcast. Mm-hmm. And that's danwaterscreative.com. And then there is getprophotoclub.com, which is where we share business advice for photographers. We've got a blog with loads of free stuff, but obviously it's also a membership site. It's a club as well for people that want to learn more and want to be able to basically ask any question anytime and just, you know, get feedback and get into the real detail. We've got that club, and we've also got some products available, and our flagship product is the four-figure family photography formula funnel, or 4FFPFF for short, which is basically, the key word there is funnel. It's kind of a much, much more detailed version of sort of what we've been talking about today, really, which is how you funnel your family portrait photographers all the way through from marketing, and there's 11 marketing techniques on there. All the way through the process and all the things we talked about, but let's say it goes into much more detail, and then all the way through to literally delivery and where can you get nice big frame bags from so you can deliver a 30-inch by 40-inch framed portrait in something that's slightly more beautiful than a bin liner. So it's got everything from start to finish, and there's a discount code for getting it through Pro Photographer Journey, and it's like normally $39.99, but it's only $29.99, and frankly it shouldn't be $39.99.
Yeah, that's an amazing price.
Way more. But I'm not selling my time on that one. Unlike photographers who are selling their time and have to charge accordingly, I'm not selling my time. So it's I can be a little bit more generous with you photographers than I can be with my clients. Those are a couple of the places. And
I'll make sure to include that on the show notes page as well. And thank you so much, by the way, for that discount. That is so generous of you.
Yeah, no worries. Yes, what's that? It's basically 25%, isn't it? So 25% off what was already not enough.
That's so awesome. The link will be in the show notes.
Cool. Thank you.
And, great.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks for having me on.
Well, you know, thank you, actually. I've got like 3 pages of notes. This has been amazing, and I feel like this interview alone could really revolutionize a lot of portrait photographers' businesses. So thank you, Dan, for just chatting with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's good fun. I always enjoy, as I say, I get a little bit excited. So I don't know what's wrong with me. It's something, I'm just a business nerd, and I don't know why.
We love it.
But yeah, I enjoy it for some reason.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. We want to reach as many people as possible and help improve our photo industry. I appreciate you all. Thanks for listening.